The unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it. We can remember and accept it. The Buddha's truth, one with myself. Homage to the Buddha. Homage to the Dharma. Homage to the Sangha. I'll just up front apologize for my voice and throat. It's just going to be what it is, so I'll do the best I can. So we are living in an extraordinary moment, a very rich, elegant surplus of lessons to benefit and challenge us. We are so fortunate to have each other in our lives. A pure heart is a compassionate heart. A pure mind is concerned about others. I've made a lot of mistakes with no one to blame but myself. These mistakes actually are not obstacles, rather clear clues from the eternal. Opportunities to focus, to pay attention, to bring awareness into what is actually happening right now. At times, it's hard to make sense of what is actually happening right now. Form is only pure. Pure is all form. Things are not what they seem, yet what they seem is where we are at. Over the decades, it seems there are a few favorite reoccurring lessons I am investigating. And I'm back onto investigating them, these lessons, and looking for a coping mechanism of change. So I take a little breath and relax. And I'd like to start by reading a story, an old story. It's called The Dog King Silver. Maybe many of you have heard of it. I hope you enjoy it and select one of the precious gems in it to help your daily training. It was here long ago, I found the guidance I was looking for. Once upon a time, the king of Benares went to his pleasure garden in his fancy decorated chariot. He loved his chariot mostly because of the rich handwork leather belts and straps. On this occasion, he stayed in his pleasure garden all day long and into the evening. It was late when he finally got back to the palace, so the chariot was left outside in the compound all night instead of being locked up properly. During the night, it rained heavily. The leather got wet, swelled up, became soft, and gave off an odor. Pampered palace dogs smelled the delicious leather scent and came down into the compound. They chewed off and devoured the soft, wet chariot straps, and before daybreak, they returned unseen to their places in the palace. When the king woke up and came down to the compound, he saw that the leather had been chewed off and eaten by dogs. He called the servants and demanded to know how this had happened. Since they were supposed to watch the palace dogs, the servants were afraid to blame them. Instead, they made up a story that stray dogs, the mutts and mongrels of the city, had come into the grounds through sewers and storm drains. They were the ones who had eaten the fancy leathers. The king flew into a terrible rage. He was so overcome by anger that he decided to take vengeance against all dogs. So he decreed that whenever anyone in the city saw a dog, he was to kill him or her at once. The people began killing dogs. The dogs could not understand why suddenly they were being killed. Later that day, they learned of the king's decree. They became very frightened and retreated to the cemetery, just outside the city. This is where their leader lived, the Dog King Silver. Silver was king not because he was the biggest or strongest or toughest. He was average in size, with sleek silver fur, sparkling black eyes, and alert pointed ears. He walked with great dignity that brought admiration and respect from men as well as dogs. In his long life, he had learned much and was able to concentrate his mind on what was most important. So he became the wisest of all dogs, as well as the one who cared most for others. Those were the reasons he was king of the dogs. In the cemetery, the dogs were in a panic. They were frightened to death. The Dog King Silver asked them why this was. They told him all about the chariot straps and the king's decree, and that people were killing them whenever they saw them. King Silver knew there was no way to get into the well-guarded palace grounds, so he understood that the leathers must have been eaten by the dogs living inside the palace. He thought, "We know that no matter how different we may appear, somehow we are all related. So now I must make my greatest effort to save the lives of all these poor dogs, my relatives. There is no one to save them but me." He comforted them by saying, "Do not be afraid. I will save you all. Stay here in the cemetery. Do not go into the city. I will tell the king of Benares who are the thieves and who are the innocent. The truth will save us all." Before setting out, he went to a different part of the cemetery to be alone. Having practiced goodness all of his life and trained his mind, he now concentrated very hard and filled his mind with feelings of loving kindness. He thought, "May all dogs be well and happy. Excuse me. May all dogs be safe. I go to the palace for the sake of dogs and men alike. No one shall attack or harm me." Then the Dog King Silver began walking slowly through the streets of Benares. Because of his long life of goodness, he walked with a calm dignity that demanded respect. And because of the warm glow of loving kindness that all the people sensed, no one felt the rising of anger or any intention to harm him. Instead, they were marveled as the great being passed and wondered how it could be so. It was as if the whole city was entranced. With no obstructions in his way, the Dog King Silver walked right past the palace guards into the Royal Hall of Justice and sat down calmly underneath the king's throne itself. The king of Benares was impressed by such courage and dignity. So when servants came to remove the dog, he ordered them to let him remain. Then the Dog King Silver came out from under the throne and faced the mighty king of Benares. He bowed respectfully and asked, "Your Majesty, was it you who ordered that all the dogs of the city should be killed?" "It was." "It was I," replied the king. "What crime did the dogs commit?" asked the Dog King. "Dogs ate my rich, beautiful chariot leather and straps." "Do you know which dogs did this?" asked King Silver. "No one knows," said the king of Benares. "My lord," said the Dog King Silver, "for a king such as you, who wishes to be righteous, is it right to have all dogs killed in the place of a few guilty ones?" Does this do justice to the innocent ones?" The king replied as if it made perfect sense to him, "Since I do not know which dogs destroyed my leathers, only by ordering the killing of all dogs can I be sure of punishing the guilty. The king must have justice." The Dog King Silver paused for a moment before challenging the king with a crucial question. "My lord king, is it a fact that you have ordered all dogs to be killed, or are there some who are not to be killed?" The king suddenly became a little uneasy, as he was forced to admit, before his whole court, "It is true that most of the dogs are to be killed, but not all. The fine pure breeds of my palace are to be spared." Then the Dog King Silver said, "My lord, before you said that all the dogs were to be killed in order to ensure that the guilty would be punished. Now you say that your own palace dogs are to be spared. This shows that you have gone wrong to be righteous. It's wrong to favor some over others. The king's justice must be unbiased, like an honest scale. Although you have decreed an impartial death to all dogs, in fact, this is only the slaughter of poor dogs. Your rich palace dogs are unjustly saved, while the poor are wrongly killed." Recognizing the truth of the Dog King's word, the King of Benares asked, "Are you wise enough to know which dogs ate my leather, straps, and belts?" "Yes, my lord, I do know," he said. "It could only be your own favorite palace dogs, and I can prove it." "Do so," said the king. The Dog King Silver asked to have the palace pets brought into the Hall of Justice. He asked for a mixture of buttermilk and grass and for the dogs to be made to eat it. Lo and behold, when this was done, the vomited up, partly partially digested pieces of the king's leather straps appeared. Then the Dog King Silver said, "My lord, no poor dogs from the city can enter the well-guarded palace compound. You were blinded by anger and prejudice. It is your dogs who are the guilty ones. Nevertheless, to kill any living being is an unwholesome thing to do. This is because of what we dogs know, but men do not seem to know, that somehow all life is related, so all living beings deserve the same respect." The whole court was amazed by what had just taken place. The king of Benares was suddenly overcome by a rare feeling of humility. He bowed before the Dog King and said, "O great king of dogs, I have never seen anyone such as you, one who combines perfect wisdom with great compassion. Truly, your justice is supreme. I offer my throne and the kingdom of Benares to you." The enlightened being replied, "Arise, my lord. I have no desire for a human crown. If you wish to show your respect for me, you should be a just and merciful ruler. It would help if you began to purify your mind by practicing the 5 training steps. These are to give up entirely 5 unwholesome actions, which are destroying life, taking what is not given, sexual wrongdoing, speaking falsely, and drunkenness." The king followed the teachings of the wise Dog King Silver. He ruled with great respect for all living beings. He ordered that whenever he ate, all dogs, those of the palace and those of the city, were to be fed as well. This was the beginning of the faithfulness between dogs and men that lasted this day. So you might recognize this. This is a story from the Jataka Tales. about a bodhisattva in training. And we are all very familiar with who that bodhisattva was. It's filled with inspiration and lessons to help navigate us, to help us navigate our way through 2020. What really impressed me and what I'd like to talk about briefly is here we see a leader. I'm not speaking of course, the Dog King Silver, whose relatives are being systematically and unjustly slaughtered. And he takes the time to consider how he wishes his actions to be guided before he goes to see the King of Benares. Before. You know, this is a critical word for me. He selects loving kindness to be his guide. What a remarkable response in light of what was going on at that time to his relatives who he loves dearly. The 10 paramitas or perfections are both a description of prajna, which is wisdom, and a means to achieving it, or the means to skillful movements. Most of us can relate to having one unguarded impulse arising in the mind and see how much suffering it can cause for self and others. We too can act with a heart guided by a specific intention or by priorities, if you like. We are capable to move with intention without getting caught up too much in thinking. As with our breath, when we begin a formal meditation period, we set it intently in motion and then let it be. In Bhikkhu Bodhi's book, The Noble Eightfold Path, The Way to the End of Suffering, he says this about right intention. The mind's intentional function forms the crucial link connecting our cognitive perspective with our modes of active engagement in the world. On one side, action always points back to the thought from which they spring. Thought is the forerunner of all action, directing body and speech, stirring them into activity, using them as instruments for expressing its aims and ideals. With the encouragement from the Dog King Silver, I began an experiment about a month ago. It's an experiment to develop skillful means. And those of you who know me know I need a lot of help in this area. So I've decided to take on a really focused experiment. And so far it has turned out to be very fluid and very fun. It's helping my brain, my memory, and it's also helping my thoughts, having an intention in mind. It's alive in this old skin bag, and it has a wide range of opportunities for me to investigate, to recalibrate, to review, to reflect. You know, it's part of 24 hours of a day. So it's simple to tell you about. The aim is to develop skillful means guided by a specific intention. So every morning, I set an intention for a 24-hour period centered on how I wish my actions to be guided. The 10 paramitas are the base guides, with impermanence flowing to the beat of daily life. So it's a very rich ground of setting an intention for the day, for lunch, for dinner, and into the night, on all the period in between for 24 hours. And I'm a firm believer that our life is shaped by our minds, and we do become what we think. The Buddha said there are four aspects to skillful development: discernment, truth, generosity, and calm. In order to find awakening, you have to develop skillful qualities and abandon unskillfulness. This can be done anywhere, at any time, when you are alone, when you're in a group, when you're in a building, whether you're outside, whether you're moving, or if you're still. Each of the 10 paramitas or the perfections falls into one of the four aspects of skillful means, discernment being the first one. And within that, one is wisdom or discernment. There's a lot of different names. I mean, you can give it whatever you like. There, if you look in different books, you'll see different ones. But one is wisdom. Number two is metta, or loving kindness. Three is meditation, or concentration. Number four falls into the aspect of truth. Four is truth. Five is virtue, or the precepts. Six is persistence, effort, determination. The next aspect is generosity. So we have charity, or giving, renunciation, you know, being content, letting go, whatever your definition is. And then the last aspect is calm, which includes number nine, patience. I have a lot of them for this one. Tolerance, acceptance, forbearance. I'm working on that one. I'm working on all of them, but that one I've been working on for a while. And number 10 is equanimity. So in short, the experiment, like today is July 26th, and it ends in a 6, so it's a 6-day. So in my mind, I've tried to incorporate these 10 labels for the four aspects of skillful means into my being. But knowing it's a 6-day, I set my intention on persistence or determination, because that's what's behind the 6 number. So if it happened to be the first, you would go to wisdom. You get the idea. So if any day that ends in a 3, you go to meditation. So that's the intention. You sit for the day, you review through the day, and once again, before you go to sleep, look at your intention and go to bed. So in short, that's the bare bone explanation of my experiment to find skillful means. It's not a task of erudition. And the Dharma is more beneficial if we understand what the words are pointing to at a heart level. The development of skillful means is essential, and it is not helpful, in my case, to anticipate the outcome or judge my performance how well the intention of the day went. I do believe that daily observation and reflection will help. It will help the experiment just to unfold naturally, just to let things be. And I think it will also reinforce what I know, that I am intimately known and seen by the Tathagata. Never underestimate the power of persistence and determination. And one of the definitions I found for determinations, I believe it was in the Diamond Sutra, that determination is a vow. You know, it's not about maybe the word that we think determination might be, but it's about our vows. And a vow is the highest form of intention. So never underestimate our vows is what that's saying. The Buddhas and ancestors are protecting us, instructing us, and sustaining us. And you can trust that. Thank you.